Welcome to another episode of The Suspendables with funny man Jungle Jim Jerome and retired NHL star Russ Cortinel.
Here's
Each week, they unleash their raw, stripped-down, unfiltered opinions on all things hockey and maybe other stuff, too. Who knows? Inside stories, absolutely. Outrage, guaranteed. Offside, for sure. And always plenty of laughs. Strap in. The Suspendables is coming at you right now.
Okay, hi again, everybody. It's Jungle Jim Jerome with another episode of The Suspendables with me and Russ Cortinel that we do each and every week. And we've had a good run, Rusty. We're well over 100 shows now. But there's big news this week, Russ. So I want you to clear something up. Those of us who follow you follow your daughter, Ali.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you want to follow someone really interesting, follow Ali. No, not you. Okay, forget exactly. You. You're not that interesting anymore. Exactly. But follow Ali with her very open dialogue about mental illness and a bunch of things. And she is now, well, tell us, Russ, what happened this week.
It's official. She's a swimsuit, Sports Illustrated swimsuit model. She's in the magazine. She's been trying for 4 years to get in. And so it's big news for her. It's great for her career modeling, and everybody's really excited and happy for her because she's worked really hard to get in there.
Well, what a great for her career.
I don't know what,
Russ. It must be life changing. I think, isn't it? Altering.
I think for work it is. Yeah, definitely. It's going to really help her. I mean, she's mainly a sports model, a sportswear. So, I'm sure her daily rate will go up significantly.
Yeah, I'm sure. Well, I've heard what supermodels make for us. So you'd be right there behind her, Russ. You go, Allie. You can look after your mom and dad.
Absolutely.
Fantastic news and congratulations to her. On today's show, some of our best shows, as much as you and I think we're fantastic, Russ, with our stories, our most rated, highly rated shows are when we have guests on, and we've had fantastic guests. But this guy I've been thinking about for a long time, and I met him at the fantasy camp. He's been there a few times when we held that, and he's one of my all-time favorite guys. One of the most humble guys. Slips under the radar there, Rusty. You know, when all these crazy guys are showing up at the fantasy camp. Some of them acting like they've never been out of the house before, Rusty. Right, and they go crazy. But Brian, has been there and we met, I feel like, you meet him for 10 minutes, you feel like you met your best friend, and he's one of the most wonderful guys. And, we want to bring him on now. We're going to say hi to the one and only Brian Leach. How are you, Brian?
Leachy.
Hi guys. Good to hear from you. Jimmy, I do have the question that you've been thinking about me. You've already done 100 shows and there was no call until just this past week. So I don't know how much you've been thinking about me.
I know, but I have, but we've had, I can't fit everyone in, Leachy.
I mean, 101, I guess, isn't bad. I still would have liked to have been inside the top 50 or something,
Boy, Leachy, give it to him.
Yeah, give it to me for sure. Anyway, it's great. It's great to have you on, Brian. Good for you. I got a zinger there. Okay. You know, when you read your stuff, Brian. By the way, before we do that, Brian. One of those years, this is kind of embarrassing for me, but one of those years at the fantasy camp in Vegas, your lovely wife came along and you brought a friend, okay? This girl, I don't know if you remember this, because I really liked her. A friend of you and your wife's, super nice girl. And I kind of got intrigued by her. Right?
Shocker.
I said to Brian, what's her story? And Brian's like, yeah, she's single, she lives in Boston. And I said, okay. So, because I'm a bit of a nerd, Leachy, and so I connected with her after Vegas. I don't know, on texting or something, and we had this sort of weird talk in Vegas about what's the best pillow to sleep on. Okay, and she had a water pillow, and so did I. Or no, she never tried a water pillow. So I thought as a great opener, I would send her a pillow. So I did.
Jesus Christ. No wonder you're single.
I know. I sent her a water pillow and I never heard from her again.
Shocker.
Let's catch up with you, Brian. You know, when you look at what you've done in your career, it's amazing. You know, it's amazing. You know, you've been, well, let's go backwards. You know, Mess said you're the single greatest Ranger of all time. You know, you played for Toronto, New York, and Boston. You won the Calder. You won a Stanley Cup. You won the Conn Smythe. You won the Norris twice. You're in both Hall of Fames, the U.S. and the Canadian Hall of Fame. You were named one of the 100 greatest players. There's that 100 number. See, Brian, again, you were named one of the 100 greatest players of all time. You were the last defenseman to score 100 points. I didn't realize that. Wow. And here's the big one, Leachy. The 90-mile-an-hour fastball, okay, and holds it. Yep. It may be an all-time record, okay, of 19 strikeouts in one game. That's a big one, Leachy. And that's a good one to have on the business card.
Where was that?
In high school. The good news about that is the pitcher that had 18 before me, Juan Nieves, went on to pitch in the pros and threw a no-hitter for Milwaukee Brewers at the time. And great lefty, ran into some arm trouble, but then he became a coach throughout Major League Baseball and, you know, worked with a bunch of different teams, but great guy. And so I can always say that I one-upped him on that. He seemed to go on and have a pretty good career himself. So that's my one reference point. But by the time we won the Stanley Cup, my fastball was up to 98 miles an hour and I'd never thrown a pitch in 8 years since high school. And that story's got, you know, bigger and bigger, the better I did in hockey. Wow. So some of that stuff may not be true for sure.
Yeah. Was it always going to be hockey for you, Brian, or was there a point there where you were looking? I mean, that's, I know some of this is all true about your baseball acumen.
Baseball was, I always enjoyed it. I skipped summer hockey to play baseball and I enjoyed pitching and playing shortstop and you're in the action, but I hated practices. You know, they were slow and you're just taking infield and batting practice. And I just loved the games and I loved a lot about it. And I wasn't someone that played hockey all the time, even though I loved hockey more than baseball. So it was fun for me. You know, I loved it. But as soon as high school was over, you know, hockey was the sport that I was focused on.
And right. There you go, parents. You don't have to have your kid in one sport for 12 months.
Absolutely. It's the worst.
We all came from that era where we could all play. Well, we played summer sports and then started hockey probably in August, summer hockey school before we went back. And look at Gretzky. He didn't, you know, the last game of the year was it till, you know, fall. So this 12-month thing is crazy.
My 15-year-old boy is playing soccer and lacrosse along with hockey.
Great.
He skipped soccer this year to do like training, you know, for hockey. And he found he was in worse shape when he went into the hockey season because he wasn't sprinting and running and chasing the ball down and working on his footwork. So he's going back to soccer again next year just to get ready, you know, at the same time he's prepping for hockey and practicing for hockey because he found he felt better on the ice because he was out there running and playing soccer. So I think it's great. I mean, I think all you guys do a great job of trying to encourage parents to get away from a 12-month-a-year training schedule. And maybe the kid's going to find his way anyway, but a variety of sports is the best for all the kids.
They become better athletes. It's proven the more sports you play, it helps that one that you excel in. Steve Nash is a great example. He grew up soccer, hockey, and then started playing basketball in junior high. And look what he became, you know, two-time MVP. And Gretzky, same thing, played lacrosse, played baseball. You're a better athlete, all-round athlete, if you can play other sports. I coached a couple kids, Leachy, my son's age. My son is now 25, but when he was about 12, we had the summer hockey thing going, and these kids, they went out in the backyard. They went out in the backyard. They couldn't kick a soccer ball. And then they went out in the front yard to play basketball, and they look like they look like they'd never picked up a ball in their life. But man, you put them on the ice, they could fly and they could shoot and pass. But eventually those two players never ended up making it. And I really believe in other sports.
It puts you, especially team sports, it puts you in a different role more than likely with every sport. It's rare that one athlete's the best in every sport. So you might be great in hockey, and now you're, you know, there's 5, 6, 7 players better than you, and you see how those players interact with their teammates, and you can pick up positives and negatives from, you know, the best players in every sport and see how they interact with their teammates and be like, geez, I hope I never get looked at like that. Or, you know, hope I'm a better teammate in the sport I'm better at than this top player is. So I think there's a lot of great learning along the way for multiple sports.
What we're missing here, Rusty, is I know, you know, this talk of double sports, right? It's great and all this talk, but what other sport were you good at, Rusty? You're a shitty golfer. Okay.
I was actually, humble brag, I was a baseball player too.
Oh, there you go. There you go. Brian, obviously you're one of the greatest players of all time. I want to ask, first of all, before I get into stuff, the poor player safety department, you know, in the last year or two, have been just taking it on the chin with, you know, everyone who watched the playoffs or tuned in a little bit. There was some crazy incidents that ended up, on George Parros's desk. And, clearly I think he needed a pass on a couple of them, or should get a mulligan on a couple of them. You did that job for a year, didn't you, Brian?
I did. Yep.
Is that the end of that? It was the end of
that. Oh, I'm waiting. I'm waiting for your next question, Jimmy. Okay.
Talk about that gig, Brian. And like I said, it was just a year. It can't be that much fun, Brian, or was it?
Well, I think it's a hard job on the East Coast for me. I found the responsibility enjoyable. I found going over the videos and trying to figure out, you know, what plays we're trying to get rid of and what's a hockey play, all interesting. So for the East Coast, you know, getting clips coming in from West Coast games at 12:30, 1 a.m. when you're up at 6 a.m. with your kids and getting off to school and everything, and you're reviewing stuff, Brendan Shanahan was the head of that for the year until he took the Toronto job. And, you know, so he wants different opinions on what they're watching. And so you have to have all your opinions in, you know, to the GMs, and everybody wants to know, you know, whether there's going to be a phone in hearing or if there's going to be, you know, a fine. Or so I found that the most difficult part. And then I also find that, there's not a lot of leeway for player safety to kind of change how it first started, where certain suspensions were a certain amount of games and for certain players. And I found that if the player safety department just had even more autonomy, maybe, because they obviously answered to the league, they answer to the general managers, and everybody has an opinion on where the line should be drawn and how it should be done. So they go a lot on precedent, and I found that difficult. I figured the way I looked at it is, you're a hockey player and you see a play, a highlight that another player gets suspended for a certain amount of games. I always felt that if I was the one that now did that, my suspension could be more, because I've already seen what happened. I didn't always agree that it had to be the same. I said, if we're ever going to get rid of this, they have to keep going up. You know, the suspensions and the fines have to keep increasing, or else you're going to go, okay, that's only 2 games, or I'm only risking 1 game if I do this, or because the precedent's been set and they're going to have to follow through. And so I think that's sometimes in the back of players' minds. And But that wasn't the reason I stopped. I think if I lived on the West Coast, I probably would have done it for a little bit longer. And I liked going to the Board of Governors meetings. I liked going to the general manager meetings. And a lot of smart people, you know, talking about the game of hockey and taking different opinions. And it may not always appear that way from the outside, but there's a lot of people that care about the game. And people are doing their best, but there is some handcuffs on that player safety department.
And Leachy, let's face it, that really cuts into the beer time. Occasionally you and I sit at a wooden, in front of a wooden plank with a mirror behind and maybe some bottles. And
it really cuts in because
we like conversation.
You're getting these video clips throughout every day. I mean, it's like three dark days on the calendar for the NHL. And the clips coming
in.
My
wife is going to send in my application right now.
That's interesting. That's interesting.
Yeah, that is really, I don't think I ever thought about it that way. And that's a really good point that penalizing, you know, not setting a standard for what the fine or what the game suspension should be and just laying into guys and it'll take away those crazy hits.
Well, Russ, if you had your way,
what's that?
No one would get suspended. We brought up stuff where suspendable stuff. And you say, yeah, it's fine. It's fine.
The head stuff, I think we've done a good job of getting rid of the head contact in the game from, you know, 15 years ago. It's way better.
But, yeah, much better. I mean, even my son, he'll see an old a game on, like when Russ and I played, and he can't believe all the slashing and, you know, hooking and the punches in the face and everything. And the scrums still go on and, you know, the playoffs are still great to watch and you can see the intensity. And but it's obviously a much different game.
Just a reminder, if you'd like to connect online with Russ or Jimmy or engage with them on social media, find out how at thesuspendables.com.
Brian, you lived in both and played, of course, both in New York and Toronto. And we've had lengthy discussions with Rusty about, you know, playing in these big markets, you know, that you're under the microscope a lot more, that it's more difficult on a player. Talk about your days in New York, beside the obvious of winning that cup in 94 and the cool thing you did about stepping aside later when Mess came back to the team. How did you find it playing in New York, Brian?
Well, of course, I didn't know anything else. You know, I came in as I played one game as a 19-year-old after playing in the 88 Olympics in Calgary for the United States. So everything was new for me. I had made trips to New York City before, but I was as a tourist and, you know, taking the train in and just looked around this huge city. So everything was new for me. It was hard for me to really say it was any different. I'd listen to teammates that cycled through and they would tell me how different the press was and, you know, the way that it was more personal. But some players came from Canada and they said it wasn't as bad as it was in different Canadian cities and different reporters that they had difficulty with. So for me, it just was part of the learning experience of being a young NHL player and dealing with the responsibilities that came with playing in New York and being a professional. So I can't really tell you that it was difficult or not. And even when I went to Toronto, I found in some ways it was easier because there's so much press there that you do one scrum as opposed to individuals constantly pulling you over and trying to get something different than the other reporters got and trying to have a different take on things without allowing the other reporters to know what you were saying. So I found in that 2 months that I was in Toronto, and to be honest, I was in a honeymoon period. You know, I get traded the beginning of March. Mm-hmm. The media was my 94 Cup teammates in Healy and Kiprios, and Neil Smith was doing things. So even if I played a poor game, they wouldn't say anything about me. They'd talk about someone else. And then when I played a good game, I'd have played a good game. That's all they'd talk about. And I'd be like, wow, this is,
that's awesome.
This is really Perfect. Nice. I said, we'll see how next year goes.
Right.
And then we had the lockout, but you know, it's definitely unique in the big markets, and it's something that's probably not for everyone, but you know, I grew up into it, and you know, there are times I was disappointed in the way people use my quotes for their story, because I talked in length and they used one line to back up their point as opposed to the mm-hmm. real point I was making. But overall, yeah. I was treated really fairly, and pretty much everybody, you know, never made up a quote or said anything that was, that I never said.
We'll do that for you here, Brian.
I know. I figured you'd take care of that.
After you hang up, we'll make up a bunch of shit you didn't say. What about the whole experience with Mike Keenan? You know, the I love Mike. You know, we've become friends. He was a great guy. He showed up at the, you know, he's at the fantasy camp there too as a coach. And yet you don't hear everyone who likes him. And yet a lot of guys say, well, you know, you got to get to know him. How do you talk about Mike Keenan and the uniqueness of that guy, Brian, and your experience with him?
Well, I get along with him now too, because, you know, as both of you know, Wayne is such a great, Gretzky's such a gracious guy. And, you know, Mike was out of a job coaching and was looking to, you know, maybe get back in the league, but also Wayne is, you know, he wants everybody to get over conflicts and everybody get along. And so he, you know, he has Mike there, and Mike and I had some good talks there, and he doesn't remember a lot of the things I remember about that year. In fact, he doesn't remember any of it, the way he talks about it. But you know, he had a reputation. He was a successful coach. Everywhere he went, their teams had won. He'd made quick changes, you know, in the winning culture. And he had great practices and everything, but he was known for, you know, moving players or alienating players that had been there before him and bringing in guys so it could be his team and his guys. And so I was one of those guys that ended up on his radar as a player that had been there and had success. And this was my point of view of it. And, you know, and I'd always played, you know, I always wanted never to let down my teammates and my coach and, you know, like everybody I played for just as hard, because I felt bad letting anyone down. But Mike would, you know, he'd call me in his office once every 10-14 days and tell me what a bad hockey player I was and explain what I should be doing differently. And then I'd go try and do it, and I'd be back in 2 weeks. And so, and then I'd hear Chris Chelios would call me and said, what's going on? Iron Mike called me last night and he's trying to trade me for you. And I don't want to leave Chicago. And I'm like, really, Chelly? Jeez. I said, I'm doing my best. I don't know what differently I can do. And finally, you know, Mess was a great guy to have on the team, obviously. Oh, he made a huge difference in my career and, you know, mental toughness and strength. And he said, just don't worry about him. Just go play your game. And I really did by the middle of the year. Just, he's the first coach I could care less about what he thought about me halfway through the year. I said I could play for my teammates and for the sweater and everything else, but whatever he says, you know, I'll just shake my head and accept it. And, you know, no pushback, just go on to the next game and go on to the next practice. So, you know, it was good to have a talk with him, you know, after I retired, and certainly to hear his point of view on it and to hear his recollections of that year on and off the ice and where he was at his stage of his lifetime and personal life and professional life. So it was really good. And like I said, he didn't see anything like the way I saw it. So, but we got along fine after that. I was happy to get it off my chest and go have a beer with him and laugh. And the reality is I only made the finals once, and he was my coach. And we won the Stanley Cup for the first time in 54 years. And there's a lot of things he did really well as a coach, his practices, A lot of his emphasis on conditioning and days off, like a lot of things that are common sense now that he was doing ahead of time. And, you know, he had us ready emotionally, even if we might not be ready like X and O's wise. He had us ready emotionally. And a lot of times in hockey, that's enough. You have a good goaltending and you have some talent. And if you're emotionally invested in most of the games and you've got some talent, there's a good chance you're going to win more than you lose. So he did a great job at that.
Leachy, I've never talked to Mark about it, but I heard Mark went into his office and gave it to him and told him to leave you alone. And I don't know if you know of that or heard that, but that kind of went around the league that Mark was like, okay, leave Leachy alone. He's our freaking best player. F off.
And I think that was after I retired, Rusty. I think he had that talk after I retired.
I remember when we were at the fantasy camp and we were in Club Privé and you and Shelly were just giving it to, was it you and Shelly or was it?
I was listening in, but it was Brett Hull, Dennis Savard, and Chris Chelios all in his ear. And you and I were listening and we just walked away and said, okay, I can't watch this anymore.
Yeah. Well, Kelly was going to fight him. Right. Kelly was he was pissed. What was, before I leave the Keenan thing, you know, Kevin always talked about Glenn Sather, you know, saying the thing about Slats was he was so unpredictable, you know, away from the ice. Like he's, you know, one of the great examples, he'd give everyone shit and he'd say, okay, curfew, you know, 10 o'clock for the next whatever, you know, whatever the road trip was, 3-4 more games, you know, curfew. And then, you know, a little while later, he would say, why is no one breaking curfew here? How come no one's getting in trouble? What's going on with you guys? Right. It was like, guys, their head was spinning when it came to this guy. And I gather it was the same with Keenan. What's some of the weird shit that Keenan did, Brian?
I don't think there was anything weird. I just think it was, you know, he gave great speeches. I thought he was, he spoke really well about family and what we're going to do and this and that. But as soon as things turned, you know, that was out the window. It was you guys stink and you guys this. And so I always thought that was interesting. I said, for a guy that's like got a minor in psychology, you know, from his university, and you would have to think that would have not a good effect on the team, like pumping everybody up and it's all we. And as soon as things go bad, it's you. So I find that stuck out to me in the early ways, but I didn't find anything weird. You know, it was
right.
He was a coach that did a really good job. And like I told you, we were ready to play emotionally just about every game. And that was the reason, because of some of the skill we had, that we were able to win enough regular season games to finish, you know, as the best team in the league and then get through some of those tough times in the playoffs. But we also had leadership that was off the charts, you know, with the guys that had won in Edmonton and, you know, kept everything even keeled, even though when it could have gone definitely sideways, but great leadership group. And sometimes they would just laugh, you know, and it'd ease us all down, like after Mike left the room, and we'd be like, okay, maybe it's not as serious as we thought it was, and let's just go play hockey, you know. So it was good, but nothing that stands out. I wouldn't say he does anything that's quirky or, you know, like unusual about being a head coach.
That's enough about Keenan. He'll love this too much. Did you guys talk about me for 10 minutes?
All right.
Okay. That's enough about him. This is funny when I say this, Brian, you know, but put the Stanley Cup aside for a second, you know, who would ever say that, but boy, your records and your accolades of what you've done, the you know, top 100 player. I mean, it sounds like you should be in the top 10, you know, with what you've done. When you look back at your career, Leachy, like I say, Stanley Cup aside, of course, which is, you know, huge. What do you look at that you're most proud of, Brian? When you had a beautiful career, 18 years, I think it says. And you know how accurate Wikipedia is, Brian. That's my go-to source.
It's right on.
Yeah. talk about that, Brian, when you got to reflect on 18 years as a pro hockey player.
I guess just longevity, like you said, you know, to be able to play that long. And I still felt I could have played a couple more years, but I need to be on a good team. And after playing 16 years in New York and then moving a couple times, and my family had just, we had just had our third child when I was playing for the Bruins, which ended up being my last year. So I had three kids that were, you know, under five years old and down to a newborn. And it was just one of those that it was kind of time out of different reasons. And I was fairly disappointed that I wasn't in the right situation at the end of my career to actually be a supporting piece and, you know, be on a team that I could help out a bunch of young players. So, but otherwise, just for longevity, you know, it's nice to be able to stay relatively healthy. I missed some chunks of time with, you know, ankle fractures and some nerve issue in my neck. But other than those three big injuries, I was fairly healthy, and to be able to play that long and contribute and be looked at as a player to help the organization, you know, win games was probably the one thing that I look back on that I'm proud of.
Well, how pissed were you, if I'm reading this right, how pissed were you when you stepped out of a cab and hit some black ice and got injured?
It was just shocking. You know, I just tried to cut between. It wasn't like it was reported. I pulled up, and it was during those snowstorms that we had for the 1 year in New York. And so, you know, all the parking, it's just like Toronto, all the street parking. But instead of walking down the block to where the parking garage was and it was all plowed out, I tried to cut between the two cars in front of my condo building and just, you know, put one foot up on the snowbank and put my hands on the two cars. And then my plant foot just slid out from under me and my weight went on it. And I heard it, you know, and I was, you know, like you always do, you kind of go into denial. And I heard it. I heard the pop. And so I went up and I laid down on the couch and I put my foot up with ice and got up, drove myself to practice the next day, and it hurting more and more as I'm driving up there. And I get to practice, they do some treatment. Now I drive myself to the hospital to get it x-rayed, and it's hurting even more. And then the doc comes out and says, Brian, you got a spiral fracture of your ankle. You're out for the rest of the year. Oh, and that's Jesus. When I started crying right there at the spot. I said, you got to be kidding me. Because I had just come back from a 2-month break. I had gone headfirst into the boards and had done nerve damage to my neck and shoulder. So my arm wasn't working, but it had come back where it was firing it enough to get to 80%. So I was back playing and we won like 7 of the 10 games or something. I was back and we were making a move back up the charts, and then I went out for a stupid off-ice accident, and you know, devastated. That's one of those examples to talk about letting down your teammates and your coaches and everybody else that still sticks with me to this day. Like, just talking about it hurts. Thinking about it,
I'm glad I brought it up then. Sorry about that.
Yeah, thanks. You maybe cut that one right out of this.
Okay. Did it take a while? Excuse me. Did it take a while to get over that? You feel, you know, you felt like you let people down. Were you down for a while, or?
Yeah, but it went. It segued right into the summer, and then where you're working and preparing for the next year. Yeah. So, but yes, the team. You know, the team went into a tailspin after that, and, you know, firings and everything else. And so it was, it wasn't great, but, you know, it allowed me more time to train. And I came back the next year and had a good year. And, you know, you just got to keep moving forward. There's nothing you can do once you're out. You just got to keep moving forward.
What year was that?
I got to look it up.
Like 92 or something. Yeah, it should be on Wiki right in front of you.
Because I remember when I was there in New York, we talked about that. He said, watch out for that black ice.
Yeah.
I, I was in Minneapolis 2 years ago. Our daughter's fiance plays for the Vikings, and Paris did the exact same thing as you're describing, but she fell and hit her head, and I thought she freaking died, and she had really bad post-concussion syndrome, and we were just walking to an Uber in between two cars, and she hit her head on the curb. So that black ice is freaking dangerous.
And this wasn't black ice. This was a huge mound of snow. But they reported it, like all the papers, the PR put out, that I slipped on black ice. And I'm like, I told you exactly what happened. It wasn't black ice. But that's the way it got reported.
Yeah, not like them to make stuff. I've got great experience with ice, Brian, but it has to do with scotch and Drambuie, okay, for many, many years.
He was a plus three drinker. You know, he's retired.
That's good.
Brian, this Tampa Bay went in the back-to-backers here, and they've become more notorious for their Stanley Cup celebrations than they are as an unbelievable team that may go on to be whatever you call them when they win a bunch in a row, legends. When you won the Stanley Cup, Brian, can you think back to the were they starting to give guys the cup for the day when you guys won in 94? I thought Mess started that with the Oilers single-handedly when Mess brought it to every single bar in the city when they won. How about you, Brian, when you won that Stanley Cup?
So we were the last team to have the last year to have no keeper of the cup. You know, the cup just went with the team, you know, and whoever had it. So we were the last team to do that. And yeah. Shocker. So the cup was at my apartment a couple times and it was everywhere. But after 2 weeks, you know, the cup doesn't have a curfew and it, you know, there's people that are interested in the cup nonstop and New York City stays up nonstop. So the night we won the cup, we had a little celebration with family and friends and staff and everybody in Madison Square Garden. And then we went to a friend of ours, restaurant and bar, and the police were there and they had the street shut down. And I remember being in there and I was so tired, you know, from the end of the playoffs that I honestly left. I left my parents and everybody and I, you know, got out of the place and took a cab and went home and slept. I slept for like 12 hours. And then woke up like it was Christmas morning and then didn't sleep for 2 weeks, I think, after that. And I didn't want to see that cup again after 2 weeks. I said, that's it. I got to go get some rest and think about next year. But it was a lot of fun. And then we had one of the lockouts the following year and the cup was moving around. But I didn't really have anything after that. My parents asked to have it back in our town in Connecticut, and they had it at the youth center there, and they had a fundraiser, you know, for the local youth center to pay money to take pictures with the cup, and it went to the youth center. But we were beginning our season after the lockout, so it was all nice, but there was nothing, you know. You look back on it, it'd be nice if I could have done some good with that, and you know, also had a set get together and everything. But after those 2 weeks of trying to do the talk shows and stay out late and have fun with friends and do everything, I said, that's enough for me. We won. That's it.
when you talk about your career, Brian, when the guys got together and bullshit in Vegas, it's, those guys, they called them campers. Boy, they sure got their money worth with some of those little scrums, you know, and Russ talked about that privé lounge where everybody hung out. It was cool. And these guys got to lean in and listen to the likes of you and Chelly and Brett Hull and all, you know, Larry Robinson and these guys. What story do you end up telling the most, Brian? A funny moment or when you guys end up getting together, shooting the shit? Which one do you like to tell to everybody the most?
Oh, it's always about Rusty. You know, he's something else, that guy. I have as much fun, you know, doing that, because the guys that Wayne invites, you know, they're sometimes there are guys you haven't met and you look up to and you admire as players, and then you meet them and they're just as good of people. And it's not surprising because Wayne surrounds himself with people that he likes to be around. And it's, right. If you're his friend, you're probably going to get along with another guy you've never met. And so I found that really fun. And then the guys that are paying to come and skate with the guys, like, they're all happy to be there, and their questions are, you know, very basic about, you know, who's the most skilled player. And so it's so easy to talk to them and to remember, you know, what it was like to be a fan. You know, I watch other sports, so I watch baseball and basketball, and it'd be the same to me, like thinking of sitting in there with LeBron James or Michael Jordan and listening to them just answer a question about what it was like. So I find that, you know, fun as well, because there's no complicated stories. There's, you know, there's all basic things that they just want to know that they don't have inside knowledge of, and they'd like to hear it from a player that's played in the league a long time or played a different role than they expect. You know, that Wayne played as the best player and ambassador. They can ask Marty McSorley something, or they can ask Chris Chelio something, and you know, mm-hmm. Dennis Savard, like the different outlooks on certain situations are all different depending on where you played and what years you played. So it was a tremendous event. Wayne did a great job, and I know all those guys had a great time that were a part of that camp, both as ex-players and the campers that, you know, paid to be a part of it.
Right. What are you doing now, Brian? Let's catch this up. Are you doing any? Are you involved in hockey at all, or what? What's taking up all your time?
Yeah, I've had an advisory role with the Rangers for hockey operations the last 4 years, and I just resigned my position at the end of the year. You know, they've kind of gone a different direction, and you know, a lot of people were let go, and it was just felt like the right time for me. Chris Drury is going to do a good job as the president and GM. And, you know, he didn't fire me or ask me to leave. I just thought it was, the way things were going, it was his ship to run, and I, you know, wished him luck, but, no bad feelings or anything. I just thought it was the right move for me to make. So doing nothing, I'll be coaching my 16-year-old again, and it looks like we got a full season lined up, and it should be fun.
That's great.
Right on, man.
Big fisherman, Leachy is. You caught any big fish lately?
Yeah, no. I've been having some boat issues like usual. So I've yet to get out, and besides doing inshore fishing, I've yet to get out to do any tuna fishing or deep sea fishing, which, as crazy as it sounds, you can do it from Massachusetts. You can go 90 miles out to the canyons, and it's like fishing in the Bahamas or in Florida. And it's so much fun. I mean, there's white and blue marlin out there, mahi-mahi, and all different types of tuna. And it's a blast when you get the good weather and get out there. But you got to make sure your boat's ready to go and there's no issues. So it's coming up. I'm getting close. I got a trip coming up in a week that I'll go spend a couple nights out there on the water. But I got to get some issues shored up, because there's no, unless you have a sat phone, which I don't have, there's only line of sight communication. So you got to make sure you've got all your safety stuff and your boat is going to get you out there and back.
Yeah. Go steal Mess's boat, doesn't he? Didn't I thought he had a big boat or a couple of them?
He did. He finally got rid of that boat. They put a lot of hours and a lot of money into maintaining that, but they finally have moved on from that. And you know, they just have their smaller ones right now. But he'll definitely have something because of the amount of time he spends in South Carolina and in the Bahamas. That he's the real fisherman out of the two of us, and I've learned a lot from him fishing wise too, as well as hockey.
Would you take Russ and I fishing if we showed up there?
I would. Do you guys get seasick? Otherwise it's a blast.
Nope.
No, I don't get seasick. Are you kidding me? The shit that I put into my stomach, I don't get seasick. Hey Brian, thanks a lot, man. Do you like the game these days, Brian? Is there anything you'd like to change or What do you think of when you look at hockey now?
I think because of the, I'm sure Rusty's the same way, because of the way we have learned about concussions and you learn about, you know, the long-term effect. And I think there is a trickle down as being a youth hockey coach, you know, for the last 12 years or 15 years, that the emphasis on that part with the NHL of eliminating, you know, hits from behind and hits to the head, that definitely changed the game. And, you know, we watch penalties now where the guy gets whacked on the wrist and it's a penalty, but the reality is you're taking away a scoring chance. And so there's little things that, you know, you kind of, you shake your head at, but you also know that it's necessary because of the long-term effects and where we're going with hockey changing. So it's a different game, but I love it still. I love to watch the skill, you know, watching a guy like Adam Fox, that was not the, got the best shot or the fastest player, or, you know, he just sees the game great. Same with the kid in Dallas that just signed, Haskin in there on defense. And there's a lot of like smart players that I enjoy watching, and they still find ways to create space on the ice and to make plays. Kucherov was amazing after not playing in the regular season to come back. And there's a lot of small ice plays that I don't know if people recognize as being an elite level play that I really enjoy watching. And there's a lot of players that do that still out there that's fun for me to watch. And then the playoffs are still the, you know, the best thing in sports, in my opinion, is watching that. You get you get a Super Bowl here in the U.S., but it's one game. So to see these players go through those four rounds, it's a lot of fun for me.
How come my Oilers, we've got Connor McDavid and Drysdale, how come they can't win?
Yeah, you watch Tampa Bay this year, and, you know, they are loaded from best goaltending down to top players, and they're, and it's not easy for them. That's how hard it is in the playoffs. Like, you need to have every part of that roster set up, and then you need to play well on top of it. You know, teams can play well for a short amount of time in those playoffs, and that's one of the parts that are interesting about, you know, about the NHL playoffs is you get in and you've got your team fairly healthy and certain positions play well for that series, you're moving on. You may get away with the next series not having everyone go, but that's what makes it interesting to me. And so I think the Oilers are, you know, stuck in that thing, trying to put the best roster together and then have everyone playing good when it counts. It's not easy. Right. I mean, that McDavid and Dreisaitl, they do it for that haul. That's why they're two of the best players in the league, because they can do it for a full season. But now you need your whole roster set up to do it for a short time. And you need to all be playing well at that time to just survive and advance to the next round.
Right. Well, Montreal, right, was a great story.
Exactly.
Ryan, that's all I got for you today. Okay. I'm glad you, but I loved your opening. That'll be a promo line for it. Really, Jimmy? I'm one of your top guys. You after 105 fucking shows.
I'll be back. Keep me inside the 200 number, you know.
Thanks a lot, Brian. We really appreciate you coming on, man. This is great.
Leachy, good hearing from you, pal.
Yeah. Good talking to you guys. Take care.
Well, there it is. Rusty. Another, isn't he great? I love how sort of
so just humble, eh?
So humble and not, you know, doesn't get too excited about stuff. Super smart, you know,
super
smart guy. And, he's probably, I hope he's still listening.
I heard that, Jimmy.
that's great. So anyway, it's all true stuff. And, I miss you, Brian. Used to be,
you're
the guy
too.
Who taught me about, you're the guy who taught me about New York City. You gave me a little history lesson. I said, how do you possibly take a kid to a soccer game if you live in Manhattan? And you told me, see that high rise right there? Well, on the fifth floor, there's a gym. There's an indoor park. On the eighth floor, there's an equestrian arena. It's all in concrete, baby. It's all in concrete.
Amazing. So
I learned a lot. Okay. Now you're going to take us over the top. Brian, we're gonna give you a piece of all the action from all the sponsors that are gonna pour in on this show. So let's get out of here, you guys. Have a good week. Go fix Yeah, okay. We can go fix that boat, okay? I want to go fishing. We'll talk to you later, everyone. You've been listening. You've been listening to Brian Leach and Russ Cortland and me. This is The Suspendables, and we'll be back. Rusty?
Yeah.
We're taking a week off. Speaking of going fishing. Yep.
All right. Yep.
I'm leaving on a 10-day trip tomorrow.
All right.
And so we're taking a little 1 week break for the summer, and then we'll be back the following week.
All right.
Good stuff. And congratulations to your daughter, Allie.
Thank you very much.
Appreciate that's exciting. It. Yeah. When's the mag come out?
I think this week. So maybe Thursday or something.
Oh, okay. Does that do they still have a hard copy or is it all
they
digital?
They do. They do.
Okay. Yeah. That terrible. Times are changing. Yeah. Rusty, go back. Your golf game's shitty, huh?
Pal? Yeah, I gotta work on it. I'm gonna go over there right now and hit some balls. It's weird. Just feels so weird over the ball.
Just stare at the ball. That's my big tip.
Really? Just keep my head still. I'm sliding. No, how do I stop sliding? So keep my
not just looking at the ball in general, Russ. You pick a pinpoint spot on the golf ball, like maybe the number or one of the letters on your ball, whatever it is, and you freeze on that while you're taking the club back. And you check it out. It'll work.
Okay, good, because I'm sliding.
Yep, sliding's bad.
Yeah, sliding's and I think that's because my head's moving forward, probably. I'm not keeping my eye on the ball.
Fuck, if we got inside your head, Russ, we'd probably see a litany of problems. Okay, if you could ever get there'd be all sorts of shit.
No wonder I drink.
Thanks a lot, Brian Leach and Stevie, my boy. Yeah, shot me a couple of questions there. Thank you, Stevie. Rusty, you have a good week. I'm sure you're going to celebrate everything with your daughter. Is she back in L.A. or where is she?
She's in L.A. and busy. And this weekend, I got to meet a listener. And he was with Bart Yakimik and his sister, Christina Hans. And Jason's and his teammates, they listened to the show. And it was funny because when I first met him, he was like, he didn't get my last name. And then I started talking to him. He goes, you're the Suspendables, you and Jimmy. I listened to you. Oh my God. It's all coming together now. So we had a funny, he just loves the show. And I told him I'd give him a shout out and thanks for listening.
Cool. Eamon got a hold of us. It's either E-man, like, you know, G-man or E-man or
I-man. Iman.
Hey Jungle, there's a picture of you. Nice picture of you when you were young with the mullet. Jesus, look at you there in Montreal. Oh. Hey, Jungle Jim, thanks for the follow. I follow this guy on Twitter. I'm really glad I found the podcast. It's all I look forward to listening, especially at work. You and Russ have such an amazing dynamic. Hard to emulate that kind of chemistry. I heard Russ mention signing, and it's been a few years since he signed my jersey when I lived in California. I had to move to Texas for work and wanted to see if you would share the address for which I can send an autograph request. I have one of his worn practice jerseys from his Montreal days and really wanted to see if he would sign it. I've included images. Thanks a lot. No, forget it. We're not doing that. We'd like to read one of these. Yeah, we'll get you set up there, E-man. And thanks for the thanks for the kind word.
For sure.
Let's get rolling, Rusty. You got to get back to work. I got stuff to do. I got to
keep my eye on the ball.
All right, go do it. Talk to you later, everybody. Thanks for listening.
See ya.
The Suspendables is a weekly podcast series featuring former NHLer Russ Cortnell and host Jim Jerome. Join us for new episodes available each Wednesday morning. Follow us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. We invite you to subscribe and review or share the show with your friends and followers. Check out our website today, thesuspendables.com.